of Channel 2 Right and beginning of the visit with Mr. Nealon, Rick and I and Mr. Nealon in the kitchen this Wednesday morning, the 8th of August, 73. Channel 2 Right and beginning of the visit with Mr. Nealon, Rick and I in the kitchen with Mr. Nealon and Ms. Nealon and the others in Mamu's room this Wednesday, the 8th of August, 73. Channel 2 Right and beginning of the visit with Mr. Nealon, Rick and I in the kitchen, and Ms. Nealon and the others in Mamu's room this Wednesday, the 8th of August, 73.
No, I ain't got much to get rid of.
You what?
I don't have much to get rid of.
Well, I don't know whether you had a chance at some of this or not. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
I brought a few more things.
What happened to the old thing? Did you? No, you didn't have. Is this what you had yes around your neck?
Yeah, that.
You never use an earphone.
No, you know why? I have some friends that do that follow me too.
Yeah.
They say, same as I do. Nothing sounds natural. You sound like someone else.
Yeah.
And finally, it gets you. You get so disgusted.
You know, take just so much of that.
Well, it doesn't help you the way they say it does. Now and then, it does. But I can hear a lark sing, but it's not a lark. It doesn't sound like it. It doesn't sound natural. Not a natural tone. It's an artificial tone.
Oh.
That bothers me. I want to hear them the way they are. Now, if I get out to California, that lark sings much better than this one.
He has
at least 9 to 10 notes in a row, and this one has about 3.
Yeah. Well, think of that.
And so, he'll sing to you if you're in the middle of the road and he's no more than 20 feet away on a post. So there I can hear him.
Yes.
Naturally.
Yes. And this one likes for you to be a little farther off.
Well, he has, you were talking about German the other day, and Dad was talking about the same thing. He noticed it. The lark here doesn't have the same notes. It's a weak little song. And he says, you know, all he says, ich weiß nicht wie. That means I don't know how. Compared with the Western lark.
Yeah.
But the Kansas lark in central this country, he has a little better song than ours, but the Westerner beats them all.
Oh. I didn't know that.
Well, no. You're not supposed to.
Mr. Dillon, I want to, and I'd like to know it. Now, when you were working on those ranches out there and cutting the hay and all, what did the birds do for cover after you cut that hay?
Well, there's this about that. There are different birds at different seasons, and when you cut the hay, oftenest the hay isn't pure oats if you sow oats. Somehow or other, a little barley gets in there or a head of wheat now and then. And when you cut your hay, some of that seed gets thrown out, and that's where the doves are found in the new mown field. They go out there to pick up the grain.
Yeah.
And if they in the valley, where I used to work, the ducks only come down there in October, November, and they leave in late February and March. April sees the last of them going north. Well, if they cut their wheat a little late and too much grain spills on the ground, the ducks get so fat out there on that they can't fly. They're just lined with fat. We used to shoot them, of course.
I didn't know ducks would eat grain.
Oh, that's their favorite food. Geese too, but the geese, they paid us $30 a month, furnished a gun and ammunition to herd the wild geese off the field, because when the grain comes up, they eat the young tender shoots. They're grass eaters, geese are largely. And so they destroy too much by pulling up the young seedlings. So,
you'd have to shoot them all?
And we had to give us a shotgun and $30 a month to go around those big 200 or 300 acre fields and herd them. And they'd see you half a mile off, they're gone. They know you're going to shoot.
Well, you didn't get too many then.
No, you didn't often get one. No, they stay out of range. They know just how far that gun will carry.
Yeah,
think of that.
And as soon as the thousand may be out there, and as you approach, the early ones will begin to rise. The ones in the back come a little later, and the ones back there a little later, and they all leave.
Well, they, Now, how big an area did you operate over there, Mr. Neal?
Oh, the little ranches were fairly large.
50 miles?
A hay field would be 640 acres, a section of land. Then next to it would be another 640 acres of hay.
Yeah.
In the valley. That's in the Sacramento Valley, the northern part of the Sacramento,
yeah.
Where they used to grow it. Now they don't grow it that way anymore. You know why? They exhausted their soil, just the way we destroy everything.
Yeah.
As long as it'll make a crop, plant it. Don't ever think. Well, Dad used to get sore at them. They burned the straw afterwards to make sure there wouldn't be anything. As one old rancher once told us, we would go down there and get a big load of straw occasionally, because we bed our cold rainy nights, we bed our milk cows in the stall, and to keep them clean we put a heavy mulch of straw down. We didn't have enough of our own, so we get a big two-horse load. The last time we got one of those ranches, he looked dolefully over his big field. He wasn't a big rancher. He probably only had maybe 300 or 400 acres in wheat. Little man. And he said, 49 years we've taken a crop of wheat off of that land. This year it didn't pay. Exhausted it. That's America. Reaping where we haven't sown. Timber, wildlife, soil, water, anything we destroy. When you talk about conservation, they get angry.
Yeah.
Too many people do. Glad for people like you folks who recognize things like that.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about how big that's a lot of territory that you had to work over, isn't it?
Yes, quite a bit.
We'd
move our hay press about every 2 or 3 days to a new area. They had a different way of handling it towards the end. There weren't so many big haystacks anymore.
Yeah.
They put them, they have what they call, can't think of anything, it's a kind of a push arrangement. And they go down the windrow, and they put that hay up in shocks that are, maybe 4 or 5 common hay shocks that are head high. They move 4 or 5 of them in one big ball by horse and what they call a derrick fork. Then they put the hay press out there and have 2 or 3 of those derricks that go out there and pick up those big shocks, one on this end, one on that end, and one in the middle, and bring them into the press. Then there's a horse with a derrick fork, a big fork, that hooks, you know. You've probably seen them. And they grab a big fork full of that and hoist it up and dump it on the man who has to keep shoveling it down into the bale chamber.
It must have been a good-sized baler.
It had to be 335-pound average. No, 135-pound average. Five baling wires around them, just as hard as a rock. If you hit one of those bales, it hurts your hands.
You could build a house with one.
Yeah, you could. We built bale piles sometimes twice as big as your house.
Did you ever see,
you have to catch them. You have to know how. You get your bale hook, you know, and you don't have time to wait. You just catch it. And keep it rolling like that.
Oh.
If you catch it exactly at the right time, it keeps rolling easily.
And
when
bale,
you get
though,
there,
it's just got a handle, see, and then a hook to it. I forgot all about that, Mr. Stephen.
You may have remembered it. Well, the next bale pile is high as this table. You hoist it up and put it on there, then you jump up on it and hoist it. Another one up, and then on that, and another one up. By that time, you got to run because there's one waiting for you. And that goes on 16 hours a day, but they paid me $2 a day.
Now, how many fellas did you have around there?
Let's see, I think 8 or 9 men, I forgot.
Oh, that many?
Yeah, let's see, I can tell you, two or three men on the derrick, on the movable derrick fork, rake, they call it. Then one on the hoist, one on the driver, one who put the hay in, and two people who tended to the wire and the rolling, and piling back and keeping clear for the next lot. They had to roll them off maybe about 30, 40 feet to start stacking.
Who changed the horse?
Who what?
Who changed the horse?
Changed horses? I used to have to do that for a long time. But it gets to be dreary.
Yeah.
Round and round and round and round. 20 minutes, then you jump out and rush to the nearest feed rack where the horses usually had about 8 horses there. And grab another 2 horses and switch them on, and then round and round you go.
Yeah.
Well, I'd get someone else to do that for a while, and I'd take over the rolling of the bale. Boy, I was young then. My joints swelled up big. Bone was still soft, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think my joints are still larger than normal. Because of the hard work and a little bit too young.
Yeah. Well, now, you never saw much of those fellas. Those fellas that in the crew there, you didn't see much of them?
Oh, yes, everybody knew everybody there. It was a cooperative thing. One depended on the other. And if you didn't do your job, the other fellow couldn't do his. So it's an organization. It's like a football team. Everybody has to do his part.
Well, you were a young fellow then, and
oh my, yes,
they was all family men.
I was 17 when I started, and so to do a man's work, you had to be pretty strong.
So you actually never got to know the people out there.
The man that owned the place, no, this was a contract job. He baled hay for the people at so much a ton.
Yeah.
And the owner we never saw. The one
well,
we worked for was the contractor who owned the equipment.
Yeah. You got to see the hay and the hay making and all, but you didn't ever get much contact with any of the people.
Sometimes I did. For a while, I was working on a smaller ranch, probably only, 600 or 800 acres, something like that, in hay. And I slept in the bunkhouse. There's a place there. You can go to the barn and get some coker sacks and put them down on the floor, wooden floor. And you always brought your own blankets. And so we slept there, and he fed you. That was one good thing about it. He fed you for that dollar a day you got.
Yeah.
And so you get up daylight and get your, before daylight usually, and get your horses tended to and harnessed and fed and watered and everything. As soon as daylight came, you had your breakfast, you were headed for the field. And I used to rake hay. That was one of the things in long windrows.
Yeah.
And that's easy work.
Yeah.
That
you'd
work.
Have to... You rake it, then you had to trip
you get your windrow to the right side. You keep watching your rake, and you can't overstuff it or it'll skip the hay. You keep watching your work, and as soon as it gets full enough, you pull the trip, and up comes the rake. And then when you come around the next time, you join up with that, and as soon as you get to the thing, you pull up, you trip, and you have a long windrow, maybe 500 yards long.
That side winder is a nice invention, isn't it?
The what is?
The one that just throws it. You just go along and it throws it.
Oh, yeah.
Throws it to the side.
It rolls it up into nice windrows.
Yeah.
You ever work where they had these hay windrows, they call? That's where you rake it up in long rows and about 2 feet deep. And then it cures pretty well there. In 2-3 days, if the weather is right, then you're ready to shock it. And you put it up into shocks. That's what they call it, shocks.
You didn't have any experiences much with the people themselves. You just worked.
Well, the boss, he did. He kind of looked after everything to see that everybody was working. A younger brother was working there, too. I remember one time I was raking, and he was shocking. A half mile up, you could just see him. And the boss came around, and he said, "That brother of yours is a real hay doodler." Call him the hay doodler. Said, "You put up shop." Well, we were taught to work. We weren't taught to fool around down there and get a pitchfork, and it was moving all the time.
Yeah.
But nowadays, everybody stands and talks a while, and then slowly moves a little. Or they'd be fired the first day if you did that in the old days.
But by and large, you didn't have any experiences much with those people.
With the owners, no.
Any of them.
No.
Mostly you just worked.
No. One place there, I had an old teamster there that worked there. He's a good horseman. And when I got there first, he'd hired some additional men the rancher had. And one was a foreigner. I think he was a man probably from one of those little countries between Russia and Poland, and they had quite a bit of labor come in from there. And he was trying to tell me something. I could barely understand him. But my old buddy that knew me, we lived close together up in the hills, he tickled me. He said, "Don't pay no attention to him. He doesn't know his butt from a $9 shotgun." So you see, we were, after a while, you get acquainted with each other, and if you've worked together for a summer, you know him very well.
Oh, you work with the same people all the time, for that summer.
Changing people?
No, the same ones.
Same ones, largely. Now and then one would get enough and quit. We had some students that came up from the college at Berkeley to earn some money for their tuition, and one of them, he worked like a fiend, young husky fella, and he liked the pay because it's better than a dollar a day, good deal. And so when the season was about over, he said, "I'm about caught up with hay baling." So then he had to be replaced by someone else. Boss finds someone in town, you know, looking for work, and no colored people around there ever, you never saw one. But the boss once told me, "Well, I can usually tell who to hire. I'll watch him come down the street. If he walks right, I'll hire him." You had to show some energy or else he was following you.
Well, now, who is that who come down the country, your partner, who come down to the country with you. He said the fellow that you come down the country with, that came down.
Oh yeah, the old timer. He knew me. He was a teamster. He used to stop at our place, but he was a heavy drinker. He drank too much.
Well, that don't matter.
Old bachelor and hard worker, but knew horses inside and out.
Oh, did he?
Oh my, yes. Well, he grew up with them. His dad had a ranch about a mile west of our place. It's more of a grazing cattle ranch, but he did raise some hay and all that. So his dad was an old timer, and one poor old fella came up there. He did have a burro, but he didn't have enough to get up to the mountains to dig for gold, looking for his fortune, you know. And he stopped at this ranch, and the old rancher took care of him. You know, we did that in the old days. We took care of everybody. He fed him and gave him a place to sleep and helped him to get on the road and fed his animal. And you know, that fellow struck it rich up there in the mountains and gold. Came back a very rich man, and he told my old friend that said he doesn't know his butt from a shotgun, his dad. He says, "You come down to San Francisco and live with me the rest of your life. You don't need to work anymore." But the old man wouldn't leave that ranch, you know, sir. You get tied to a place and you don't want to leave it.
But now this fella knew horses.
Yes, he did. I wish I knew horses the way he did, and I knew something about horses.
Wonder how they ever get to know horses so well.
Well, they live with them. They grow up with them.
And work them all the time.
And they work them, and they ride them, and they take care of them. There's no veterinarian. You have to take care of your horse, so you don't need a veterinarian. And they knew how.
Now, he furnished horses for this A outfit?
No, the rancher furnished the horses. Most of those ranchers had 20, 30, sometimes 40 workhorses. They grew. They imported some. They imported a stallion from Belgium or some European country, a well-bred horse. Big, strong animal, and they would breed their mares to that animal and develop stronger, heavier horses that way.
Yeah.
So the cattleman's horse, he's light. He's fast on his feet. He has to be, but the draft horse,
yeah.
Well, he has to be chunky.
And that's
strong.
The horses that work in the hay, they're draft horses.
Most of those were draft horses, or close to it, bred up for that.
Yeah.
I
don't quite get a picture of the country out there. The country's developed, and you've got all those nice ranches, hay and grazing and all.
Yeah.
And that fella that you said, he said, now we've had hay on that 49 years.
Yeah.
Well, it had been cultivated and settled a long time, hadn't it?
Yes, he probably came there in 1840 or 50,
well,
some such time.
Well, yeah, I kind of pictured this country you were in as wild country.
Well, there was plenty wild country there where we lived. We were up in the hills a few miles, you know, and...
Well, how'd you happen to go back up in the hills? Why didn't you stay out there where it was...
Well, there's several reasons for that. You have to have irrigation water or you can't raise fruit trees.
And they don't need it for...
And down in the valley there, they had a different type of agriculture. The rainy season provided them all the moisture for their hay and grain. Then when late April, mid-April usually, to the next September, not a cloud in the sky, not a drop of rain ever falls. And so we were up there in the hills where you had to irrigate and to get water. It's a funny thing with that heavy soil. I've got some at home. I brought home 100 pounds of the old farm, reducing the state in size. And I grow some of my California plants in their own soil that way. Well, that soil there is remarkable for this. You can make a ditch about 16 inches, maybe 20 inches deep, 24 inches wide, and put a stream of water in that 3 miles up in the hills, and it'll go all the way down those 3 miles, and you can't tell the difference. You haven't lost anything to speak of, because an inch away from the wall, that's all just as dry as the desert. The water doesn't scatter. Here in the sand, you couldn't run it across your lot. It'd be gone.
Yeah, and the ditch would be gone.
Yeah, but up there, you run that water from the mountains in open ditches down into the foothills. That's where you grow your fruit, in the foothills of this area. Apples, they grow up in the mountains and need the colder climate. We didn't have a good apple country. You need snow in winter for good apples. Maybe you know that too. You need cold weather in winter to make good apples. Now they may be developing apples and through breeding that will do fairly well away from the snow country a little bit, but down in Florida we don't have apples growing in Florida.
Yeah.
You have pretty good dirt here. You might be able to make an apple tree grow and do a little. It won't be like up in the mountains.
The Bahia grass would get it, Mr. Newland.
Yeah, it would. It'll eat up everything. I noticed it's taking up the place here. What tickled me as I came up, you have quail in your backyard. Saw one rise up and settle down again.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like that. I told wife I'd appreciate if I had that.
We don't have near as many as we had.
You hear him call Bob White occasionally here in the spring?
Yeah. They're on up till now.
Yeah. Well, they must nest there somewhere. You don't have any cats? You had cats, I don't think you'd have quail.
Well, the cats are over there, across the road. But they come over on this side hunting. I shoot them.
Well, I would too.
Whenever I
would
got
too.
Anything to shoot with.
I would too. Cats are all right. They have a place, but look out for them if you have birds.
They get them.
And they do me a lot of harm where I live because the old ladies there, many of them old maids or old widows, and they all have a half a dozen cats and come over and keep the robins from cleaning up my garden for sow bugs and other worms. Other insects.
I don't quite see why you would leave California with all that settled land there, and all of you was able-bodied at that time.
Yeah.
And there was all sorts of things you could
do.
You
just don't know the discouragement people feel. Suppose you sat here and saw everything you had, your cattle and your grass and your farm and everything going down the hill into nothing. It's discouraging. And those people worked for 25 to 30 years to build up beautiful orchards and vineyards.
Yeah.
All withering up before your eyes. You get so discouraged, as one of them drank himself to death, the other put a bullet through his head.
You
just couldn't bear to look at it. You're getting on to 60, 50 and 60, you can't start over again.
But that was around 1910, 1908, 1906, and by 1906, all that country had, it was all pretty well settled, wasn't it?
Well, not too well settled.
And the little towns were
the nearest neighbor was had his farm about a half mile away, and another one a quarter of a mile away, the next one a half mile away, the next one another half mile away. They were small, family-sized farms. Fruit farms, you can't have hundreds of acres. You can't tend to that.
No.
We were one of the larger because we had more labor power, four boys.
Yeah.
And so we'd have over 100 acres in vineyards and orchards.
Yeah.
And that was a big for Foothill Ranch.
You didn't bring that picture that you took.
Oh, no, I forgot the old picture. I'll have to bring it sometime.
Yeah, we'll see it sometime.
Yeah, even the old Cascaria bushes down the border fence line still there just as they were. Things haven't changed except all the trees are dead. When I took the picture, though, it was 5 years later, and some of the fig trees were still living, but barely so. The olive trees, you can't kill them.
Yeah,
you can.
They're right there about the same as usual. They don't bear because they don't get any water, but...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, they were, as soon as they had all the gold out, and stored in Fort Knox, where it's been a problem ever since, then they were going to recolonize. They'd get the land for a little or nothing and bring in new people and build and furnish the water again. Nobody believed in them. And the old type, mostly Germans and Swiss, and some Italians, hard-working people. You can't find them every day. Foreigners, most of them. And they,
well, now, one reason, Mr. Nealon, one reason when you went around these places, you interrupt me anytime you want to. One reason that you didn't, you knew how to make hay and all like that, but you didn't know much about the fellows you was working with. One reason was that they looked on you as a sort of a foreigner.
To some extent, yes, but not as much there as in the South. The South.
But I'm talking about out there.
Out there, they weren't so bad about that.
Well,
I found out that there's more prejudice in the South
than
the Yankees, particularly.
I'm trying to stay out west now. I don't want to move to the South.
Yeah, out there wasn't so bad. Of course, they'd call you Dutchman.
Yeah.
And all that. But
how long did they call you a Dutchman?
Oh, as long as I was there.
And on up through the university?
Here they didn't so much, no. In fact, the professor that taught languages always signaled me out because he wanted me to talk German to him because I talked pure German and he wanted to keep himself in conversation. And you know, if you have to teach German and French and Spanish, that's a big assignment. And when he got a hold of me, why, every time I crossed the campus and he saw me, he came over and we engaged in conversation.
Yeah.
It helped him, he said.
Yeah.
Well,
how about your older brother?
They were all the same. I could have brought you a picture of that. I'm looking at it this morning. A 1914 photograph of the agricultural club. I have three brothers in it.
But
I was already farm foreman on the experimentation farm.
Yeah.
The oldest brother finishing up his last year, and the younger brothers were just in their first year.
Yeah.
So, someone gave me that old 1914 alumnus. And so I looked it over and I said, my God, there's our old Dean Vernon. He only had a master's. But in those days, that was called an education.
Yeah.
Now it wouldn't get you anywhere.
Well,
he was a wonderful person. He was a Quaker from Pennsylvania. And honest, hard-working, friendly sort of fellow, especially to me. He just the second year he saw to it that when they built the new agriculture building that I got the job as janitor.
Oh, did he?
At $12 a month.
Yeah.
And I kept the building cleaned up and swept out. Of course, I had to get up very early, but my grades were straight A, and they recognized that, and they gave me help like that to help me through.
Yeah.
Then, in addition to that, of course, I had to hoe weeds and things like that on the horticultural grounds, but that was 12.5 cents an hour. But the second year, they favored me again. Well, I kept my hours to the minute. I didn't cheat anybody. If I worked 2 hours, I put down 25 cents. If I worked 4 hours, it'd be a dollar. Is that right? 50 cents. And so the second year, they gave me a greenhouse to take care of and keep in order, keep all the plants in order, 20 cents an hour.
Yeah.
I had it made.
Yeah.
The end of the year, I bought me a suit of clothes.
Yeah.
$12.50. You could get something then in those days. That suit now cost you 48 or 58.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was pretty hard going, but I guess they remembered that when I got through and went back to the farm. They needed the farm for me, and they passed up the 4-year men.
Now, all your
offered
brothers.
Offered me the job.
All your brothers are still out in California?
No.
Oh, they were all here.
I only have one living.
No, I mean, when
he's
you were
out west.
Farm foreman.
Oh.
Your older brother, Dad?
Yeah, younger and older brother both died.
Well, your older brother, he lived a long time.
Oh, he is working at the railroad. I think he died some like 6 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've overstayed my time too.
Yeah.
Next birthday will be 83. That's too long to be around. You're getting people's way, don't you?
Yeah. That's
And you can't remember, that's the trouble.
Oh, that's too
you
bad.
You ask me about different things
about that.
That happened, I just can't remember, except this thing. What was that now? I had it on my mind while I was driving down here, since I was extension forester. I asked the wife, I guess, to give me the right
word.
Well, now,
you went back out there for a year while you was a farm foreman.
No, I went out
here. I mean, for months.
No, I got my little education here.
I say, when you were farm foreman.
Oh, yes,
you
I paid out enough. They paid me $60
now,
a month.
How'd things look then?
Well, that's the time I took that picture. Things
yeah.
were going back, but the barn was still there. The house was still there. The trees, the shade trees, the oaks around the background were still there. You could look down the hill where we had built a good-sized barn. It was still standing. Now it's a collapsing wreck.
The
fig trees, you can still see a row of fig trees there. They're hard to kill, but now they're gone.
You still own the land?
No. You couldn't hold on to it. You know, depression coming on. Younger brother had a ranch further up in the hills than we were. Olives and apricots. And other fruit, peaches. And they told him when the depression is on, don't harvest those olives. It won't pay. Your cost of picking will exceed the price you get for them. $19 a ton for those little olives, you know. It costs you a lot to pick a ton of those.
Yeah.
Labor. Even at the low cost of labor then. So he had to haul equipment from the valley cities up into the mountains with his little truck in order, because when he bought the thing, he had so much to pay each year, and the fellow was hoping he'd miss a payment and repossess the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't stand for that, so he worked day and night. hauled his freight during the night. I don't see how, youngest brother, don't see how he ever survived it all, but he made his payment and he owned the farm.
Yeah.
After about 10 years.
Yeah.
So,
now that was thing. After you all had been dried up.
He was like me, but I couldn't get away. He could. So, after he'd been here for 5 years, something like that, probably 5 years, he got his 2-year education here in intensive agriculture. Then he went back to Southern California. We had an aunt there in the Los Angeles area, Fullerton, about 20 miles from Los Angeles. And there was a high school there. And he got his high school education there by, as I told you, collecting yerba buena, largely, and then he did some other work, too, to make his way, pay his way. And then from there, he went off to Berkeley, and the war interfered, and he had to spend some time in World War I. In camp, they never did send him abroad. I guess the war was tapering off. He was too young at first. And then he went back and finished, got his bachelor's at the University of California. And so then he and his brother together acquired this ranch. But his brother died. And he had to face it alone. His brother's wife demanded every cent that had been her husband had paid in on the farm when he died, and that was unfair because the poor fellow nearly killed him to pay her off and at the same time pay himself off. You know, some people are heartless. They just want the money. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
And if he could get it, he'd get it and pay her off.
Well, what branch was he in?
He was raising fruit out there.
What branch of the Army was he in service?
Oh, he was in the Army. I lost track. I was in the service myself then, and I've forgotten it was the Army, but what branch of it?
He's not the one that liked horses.
No, the one that liked horses. I have his picture on horses up there.
He's the younger one.
He's riding horses there. He was in they never sent him abroad either. He was in a horse brigade that was supposed to break up the front lines and things like that. I don't know enough about it. I'm a Navy man.
Yeah. But the younger brother next to you did make a go of it.
Yeah, he finally toughed it out and made it. But it was 10 years of awful hard going. He got so he wouldn't spend a nickel, he didn't spend a dime on anything. He couldn't afford it. Like me, working my way through there. The first year I couldn't buy a 5-cent ice cream cone as much as I wanted one. I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
So I had to save everything, and I made all my payments on time, and I guess people appreciate that.
Good morning.
I didn't have to ask for time off. I didn't think there was such a thing, and to be late with your payment, your board and lodging.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
Well, all those fellas you worked with, all those fellas you worked with out there on the ranches and things, they were all pretty hard workers too then.
Oh, well, they had to. You wouldn't keep your job a half a day if you didn't file into it.
Well, that must have been just all you associated with just hard-working people.
Yeah, hard-working people. And now we don't have that anymore. I see them out there at the experimentation farm leaning against their home most of the time.
How about your neighbors out there, Mr. Nealon? Did you? Of course, they work hard, too. You didn't see much of your neighbors.
No, we visited occasionally on Sundays. And then we did have this thing. The nearest post office was 3 miles up in the hills. And one would go get the mail this week, this Saturday, and bring it down for the rest, and the next time someone else would get the mail and bring it down to the rest, to the neighbors, the nearest neighbors, those too far away. And so we could stop and chat a while. One fella, he'd always like to have a little glass of wine, too. So, of course, the wine was free there. The drinks were free. Some of those fellas I got, I'd get on the cellar with them. Now, what kind do you want? We had sherry, we had port, we had Angelica, we had, what is this tart wine now? Claret. Well, let me taste first. So he'd sample them all first. He'd drink the profit away before he bought his 15-cent quart. But most people were sensible. They'd sample one or two and then decide which kind they'd like best. Some people want a sweet wine, some people want a tart wine. Some people say, I want that sour wine. Well, there's nothing sour to it, but it's claret, it's tart. And it's pure grape juice from a certain grape only that makes that claret. And if you wanted port, you'd have to use a variety called Mission. The Zinfandel, even today, they're still growing Zinfandels out there. If we had, that would make claret. Then the white grapes, like Goodedel, they called it. That's a German name. Goodedel means good, pure. Goodedel. So that would make the most wonderful golden sherry you ever saw. You may be teetotalers and wouldn't look upon winemakers with much favor. But nobody in our family ever drank too much.
Oh, really?
Do that.
But you did have it.
Christmas time, we'd all have a little glass for Christmas dinner. Otherwise, hardly ever on the table. Nobody ever took a drink. It was too common.
Oh, you didn't care for it. You just drank milk.
Mainly milk. We had all the milk we wanted. We had 2, 3, 4 cows of milk often. So we didn't need to drink wine. I liked it. I enjoyed it. And so did everybody else. But it isn't necessary to guzzle it. You don't drink it because you want to get teed up. You drink it because of its flavor.
Mr. Nealon, let me tell you. I think you feel closer to that country out there than you do to any of the rest that you talk about.
Never so happy as when I get out in those old hills.
Even though they ran you out?
Yes. It wasn't the fault of the hills and the country. It's human crookedness and countless greed.
That one little book that your teacher had in the closet where she kept her library locked up, that one little book on birds.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't think that sort of entered your mind?
Oh, in those days, I read everything I could get time for on birds
it?
Or anything else, any animal, anything in nature, trees or wildflowers, anything I was interested in. That's all
you?
I knew.
Oh. Anything? You've got magazines.
Not me.
You're bound to get some magazine.
We've got one newspaper and then an agriculture paper, and that's all we got. No magazines at all. Not in those days. They didn't have magazines like they do today.
Well, they had a good many.
They may have had some, but you know, they were costly.
Yeah.
We lived close to the vest.
Yeah. They live.
The newspaper cost you something. Then the agricultural.
The newspapers were kind of like magazines there for a long time. They would carry articles on birds and wildlife.
No, very little in those days. You know, was 60 years ago.
Well,
60 years ago.
Yeah, but it was more civilized
70 years ago.
It was more civilized then than it is now.
Well, not in the way of publications. I'm just astonished at the beautiful publications on natural history.
Yeah, you got so many now you can't even read them.
You can't read them. It's impossible.
But that scarcity made it more endearing.
What did the scarcity? Yeah.
Scarcity.
Well, it was good in this way. When I get there, there isn't a wildflower, there isn't a grass variety, there isn't a bird, there isn't an animal, there isn't an insect I don't know.
Out there.
I grew up with it, and that's all there was to know, so that's what you learn.
And that's what you learn. But you learned that.
Yeah, you
but
learned
you,
that.
But other brothers didn't.
If you're interested, all of us did. All of us.
The older brother wasn't
as much interested, but he was that much interested.
He did know
I was tickled to death because when I found the pictures hidden away, among other old pictures in the book, of the old farm home. And then I took a picture in 1915. Yeah, it was 1915 when I first went out there. First visit back home, 5 years after that, a little over 5 years, of a pine tree that was off our property up a lane that led to the neighbors up on a pretty steep little hill, a short little steep hill, a beautiful big spreading pine that we kids always went to collect the nuts because they were good eating. But the hard shelled pine nuts, you have to get two rocks and crack them, but there's a good sized nut in them. Well, the lifespan I found later of that tree is 80 years. And that tree was over 40 years when we left, and 5 years later it was still a fine tree. Today there's no sign of it. It would have to live 20 years longer than its lifespan to be there. So those trees, I have a nice picture, two of them, in the adjoining trees, pines, you call them digger pines. A branchy pine. It's not a straight stemmed one. Rarely do you ever see one straight stemmed. They're branchy. Oh, I can't remember the name now. Pinus something. Anyway, I've got a picture of them just the way I used to see them when I was a boy. So things like that mean something to me. Now, you folks have other interests, and so each of us stays pretty much with our constituted interest. We were born that way.
That was just up the hill toward those people?
Or what people?
That
were.
Pine. Now
oh,
your
yeah.
Neighbors.
This was, I'd say, about 150, maybe 200 yards from our home.
What, those people lived only that far from you?
Oh,
your
which
neighbors?
People are you talking about? I thought you were talking about the pine trees.
Well, you said there were some people that lived just up
oh,
past
yes,
the tree.
Oh, yes, it was a lane that led to, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different farms beyond us. We were on the main highway, the main road from the valley to the mountain. And
these people
lived further back. They were not as well fixed as we. Some were even bachelors. You know, he didn't do too much on his own if he's a bachelor.
Well, I guess you all working as much as you all did, you didn't see each other much.
Yeah, we saw each other a good deal. One of them, he was an old German, and he they went out there, and when they were, used to be a ship's carpenter, and he went out there when he's probably about 35, 40 years old, and established himself an apricot and almond orchard, hoping to get married someday. But you know, by the time his orchard, he'd be up in his 40s, and he's pretty well past the age where you get that ambitious. So he stayed a bachelor. So we were four boys. We were a little short of shotguns, so I'd go over there and borrow his shotgun from him. And then I'd bring him a teal duck or a duck all picked and ready to roast. And he was a peculiar old duck. He'd never pretend that anything you gave him was much. He had his peculiarities too. He held it up and, well, this is not much of an eating duck, is it? And I says, one of the best. But he would have something that would belittle the whole thing.
Yeah.
But that was his nature.
Is
his
that
nature,
right?
His peculiarity.
You still remember who he was?
Huh?
Can you still remember who he was?
Yeah. Alfred Henrici. H-E-N-R-I-C-I. He was an old ditch carpenter. He could do good carpenter work, by the way.
He must have built himself a nice house, then.
He built himself a nice little house, but it was plenty small. I used to work for him a little. I'd help him with his pruning, you know, 50 cents a day to get his vines all pruned. And then he had some pruned, some grapes that you had to tie up. They were Thompson seedless. And ours were all pruned into 3 odds. Short, the long switches every year. But his had to be tied up. So I'd gather up all the branches, 5 or 6 or 8, 10, and hold them up next to the post, and he'd put the string around them, a piece of strong cord around them. And so I worked for him. About the middle of the afternoon, he said, now it's time out for a little swig or something. He had a little cellar too, just a little wine, average wine. Then, at one end, he had a wooden cook stove, of course, like everyone else. And then in the middle, he had a table where he could eat his meals. And a little, about 4 feet further over, was his bed. And that was the extent of his whole holdings.
Oh.
And it was comfortable there. He didn't have to do much. He had to get around.
What kind of outbuildings did he have?
Just a little outhouse about 20-30 yards away from the house.
Did he have something to for his tools and all?
Oh yes, he had a tool shed. That was part. He didn't have horses or anything. He just had us tend to that. Who had horses? He's cultivating. Every orchard and every vineyard had to be plowed and harrowed every year, and then you make little ditches along for the irrigation. So he had to have that done for him because he wouldn't have a horse or a cow on the place.
Yeah.
No, he had a pasture, but he rented it out to a neighbor who had some cattle.
Yeah.
It joined up another pasture.
Yes, he needed to have a ship there to live on.
Yeah, well, I guess in ship quarters, he, compared with what I experienced in the crew's quarters and all, he had a mighty roomy place.
Yeah.
Board ship, you were pinched in there and you know, had any room for anything.
Oh, yeah, I guess he'd have that in mind when he built that.
Yeah.
That'd be big to him.
Yeah.
He had the cook stove at one end.
Yeah. And a little table between that and the bed.
Yeah.
Then he had some German calendars. He always had an old country German calendar on the wall. And he got a German paper, too, a newspaper. I remember that, but what amused me, I got there while he was washing dishes one time. He had his plate was a deep soup plate, and then he would eat his stuff, whatever he ate, out of that, and then he had a kettle with hot water, and then he did his dishwashing in his soup plate, in his plate he ate on. It was economical.
Yeah.
Didn't have to buy a dish pan.
Yeah. Well, now that's a sort of, that soup plate, that's what you ate your oatmeal in.
Yeah, we had a big bowl of that. I think that, I have some every morning for breakfast.
That may be right on, Mr. Leland. Does that bother you?
No, not a bit. That's the quietest thing I ever heard of.
It is as quiet as I've heard.
Yeah, mine makes a noise. I like to cook myself a little oatmeal, you know. I'm still staying with my contract.
Yeah.
Remember what it was, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, I can cook myself a little bowl. I don't cook so much. You don't need as much food as I was growing up, but I think it's good for you. I think it gives you the kind of protein you need.
You talk, you and, what was his name?
Alfred?
You and Herr Alfred talk German.
Yeah, all the time. And we had some of another German there I used to work for. By the way, he was Wink, George Wink, W-E-N-K. And he had a big orchard, a much bigger plantation, orchard ownership. He had figs, and he had pears and prunes and plums and cherries, and then some big, two big vineyards. And so I had to help him with that once in a while. And you know, you trim the vines, usually 3 to 4 feet twigs come out, and you prune them down to 3 buds. And then you have to gather all that up and carry it out to the end of the row in big arm loads. And so 50 cents a day, but when I was 16, I was working for him, and he said, no, he said, you do as much work as a man, I'll give you 75 cents a day. I thought that was pretty generous, too.
Yeah.
Well, I could buy some more ammunition then.
Yeah.
For the hunt.
Yeah. And the gold judges dried him up, too?
Everybody there was dried up and killed off. Nothing there now, but you can see where the rows once were. Cattle grazing over everything.
And not much grazing.
Nothing left there. Just went to nothing. And that was wrong.
Now, all the people you knew then was Germans?
No. They weren't all Germans, but a number of them were. Some were Swiss. One was an Italian. But, you know, foreigners, somehow or other, we had some that were not, that were Americans or no one's a true American. You all trace your lineage back somewhere to the old country, England or Scotland or someplace. But the foreigner works harder and takes more punishment than the American of today would. He wants to make it easy.
Or then.
Huh? Or then, you're right.
Yeah.
Even then. They want to make it easier than that. But the foreigner, he is so obsessed with owning a piece of land of his own, that's a privilege they'd never had in the old country. So, to hold on to what they had, they worked early and late,
yeah,
hard, and hardship, and lived close to the vest.
Well, now, you know what that does, Mr. Nealon. They have a interesting sort of life, but they never know people anymore. You see, their minds are full of...
Oh, they are very limited in their scope. Yeah, you're right. They just in their own little enclosure and not much more.
Yeah. Now, I can tell you, that thing would carry over. You see, you were a county agent, and I just read what Mr. Gratz said.
Oh. Yeah.
All those things.
Why he got in that notion, I don't know.
Huh?
But he was an old friend of mine.
Yeah.
And not too close, but we would we stayed acquainted. And so when he retired, he said, "I want to write your history up." I'd forgotten all about it until I stumbled across it.
Yeah.
Is something in there that's of any use?
Well, that's useful. Now the thing that Fraser did is not any use. No, it's
That wasn't his name.
That what did?
Fraser.
Oh. Oh, you know, whatever made him do that, I can't understand.
Well, somebody had to do it, and he did.
A member of the School of Forestry, and he did that. The rest of them, they scorned me for a lifetime.
Yeah. Well, and how Gratz did it, he did it up well. Now, if Fraser had had that to go on, he could have done better.
Yeah, he.
You know, it's kind of hard to get information out of you.
Well, I don't regard anything I did as important enough.
No, it's not that. It's that county agent mentality you've got. And you've got some of those, you are propelled by some of those things,
well,
some of those sayings. You've got so many sayings, you see.
I think more of doing something than recording.
Well, now you see,
something.
Right now, it's very hard for me to get to you. I listen to you for 30 minutes, but you don't listen to me.
I struggled to try to think of what you might want to know. I can't understand what you might want to know.
Well, you talk all the time, you won't let me tell you. You see, I listen to you for 30 minutes in a row and don't say a word. And I try to say a word, and you help me out. Now, that's that county agent mentality. Now, you didn't have that till you got to Flagler County. And then you got interested, you've told us, but it's down there now on a piece of paper. you were interested in all sorts of things. It's just shameful how many things you were interested in, and not just in a leisurely way, but you were pushing them. So you got to be a pusher, Mr. Neeland.
Well, isn't that part of life if you want to get something done?
Well, if you want to get something done, yes, if there's any great incentive
in
that.
Who wants to sit there and draw his pay and do nothing? That gets me. I want something to do. If it looks like it's worth doing, I'll tackle it.
Well, you certainly had it there in Flagler County.
Yeah, I did.
And let me tell you, this thing that you and Henderson Roger did.
Russell Henderson.
In that...
Land use thing.
Let me tell you, Mr. Neeland, that's almost ridiculous. The great scope of that.
Yeah.
And just two men boring holes in every section of land in the
state
of Florida.
No, every section. Just to prove, is that really what it appears to be?
Yeah.
After a while, you get so. If you really know and see what you're looking at, you know what that soil is. I can tell just by what grows there. The best index you'll ever get to a soil is if you know native ground cover, then you know the soil. But you have to know the association or you won't be any good. Now and then, though, we had to bore a hole to make sure we were right.
Yes. Well, if you just go to the state of Florida and now and then bore a hole, over a period of 3 years. That still is...
Oh, it's a lot of work, yeah, but we worked early and late on that. We didn't fool around. If you got a job, do something about it. Make something of it if you can. Maybe you can't, but you make the effort.
Yeah. Well, now, you didn't have to work through anybody in particular then. You had your contour maps or whatever you used.
Yeah.
And you and Russell were on your own.
Almost all my life, the last 50 years of my life, nobody told me what to do. I did what I thought needed to be done and everybody was pleased, or they didn't know or they didn't care.
Yeah. Well, now, after you got to be the extension forester, you had to work through certain people, by and large. Now, you didn't have to work through the county agents. You could work through organizations, through the 4-H Club.
I did something with them.
Any organization that had something going.
Yeah, I did. I worked with organizations,
you
wherever
were,
I could.
You were available to them.
Yeah, anytime. Available to everybody. Nobody looked little, nobody looked big to me.
Yes.
So anybody had a problem, I did what I could about it.
Yeah.
And no matter Pensacola or Miami. Yeah. I get there sooner or later. I tell him when I could be in that part of the state again. You know, you don't want to waste the public funds.
Yeah.
And so I plan my work for this part of the state this week and that part next week so I could catch everything that needed to be done there. Now they don't do anything anymore. They just sit.
Yeah.
Oh, it burns me up.
They go to committees.
You get twice or three times the money I did and don't do anything.
They go to meetings, Mr.
Yeah, that's the trouble. You have a meeting, that's it, a conference.
And furthermore, they all last a day or two. And if they go to a meeting, it's going to take them half a day at the least.
Yeah, at least. I don't know. Have we gone impotent, is that the right way to say that?
They all do it now.
Have we lost our effectiveness? Have we lost our conscience? Have we lost everything?
Well, let me tell you. You see, you didn't have to worry about that when you were in the extension forestry work, because they didn't do that.
Well,
they were beginning to, but they hadn't got into it. Now, you worked through, Mr. Neal, you worked through the county agents.
Well, I'll tell you, in a word, I'll tell you what it is, and then you go ahead. Nobody cared, nobody knew what I did, or appeared to know. I was entirely on my own the whole 20 years I was in extension forestry. They didn't know what I was doing. It wasn't important. An agriculturalist doesn't care anything about forestry.
Yeah.
A forester doesn't care anything about agriculture. That's the trouble. So I was on my own. What I did, as far as I could see, never had a comment, a critical comment, in the entire 20 years on anything.
Yeah.
And I finally decided they just don't give a hoot. Well, here was the thing, I think. They thought I probably did something, and that's all they cared about.
Yeah, that's all they cared about.
But I tried to pick something that I thought should be done. The last thing I did you see this thing about the honey tupelos?
Yes.
Well, it took 10 years to prove something there.
Yeah.
So I had to go down there and look that over. I even got a picture, but it's not a good picture. The good pictures have been given to the newspapers, but that was one of the honey tupelos. This is the man that planted it and grew them, and that's one of the honey tupelos there.
Oh, yeah. The man on the right is the one that did the planting.
Yeah, he's a good man. He does things right, and he knows how to work with plants. And he is developing better fruit and better citrus trees. So I thought he might be a good man. So I went out to West Florida and collected the seeds in the rivers there, river banks, and brought them to him, and he raised them in the nursery. Did you read the whole thing through?
Not close.
It's a funny thing. I wrote every word of it except one change they made. And that was they put professor instead of mister. And I'm no professor. I'm not professing anything. Someone else will have to profess me as knowing something. I don't claim to know anything. But if there's something to be done, they call on me, and they have. So I didn't ask for a job since I left to the road with my blankets on my back. Oh, I did too. I had to ask for a job when I came here and get a job with a hoe-to-hoe weed.
Yeah.
But after that, no more.
Yeah.
So I could finish my two-year course in agriculture. But Thornhill is a good man. And he determined something we needed to know. And I'm glad he made a good use of it. See how those trees are branchy? And they make a million blossoms and make that honey that will never sugar off, high-grade honey. But it doesn't grow naturally south of Alachua County.
Oh, yes.
But the beekeepers won't know if it would do well down there. Well, I said, I don't know, but let's try.
Yeah.
So I went and got the seed, and John Haney is the apiculturalist. He found the man. I said, you get the right man, and I'll get the seed. He worked with bees, still does, but he's retired now. And I was astonished to think that those trees did that well, because I see where they were planted is a big marsh. And you never find the Ogeechee Tupelo anywhere except on the bank of a stream.
Yeah.
So I thought he would plant them close to the water's edge, the marsh's edge, where the soil would be permanently moist. But he put them up on the higher bank there, and they did all right, even on drier ground than they're naturally found in.
So they're
making lots of honey there. Yeah. Thousands of bees working on those.
Well, now, will they grow here?
Yeah, they'll grow here, I think, but I'm not recommending them until I know. I'll have to try first.
In nature,
they grow only along stream banks, like along the Apalachicola River in West Florida. The Suwannee in the northern part has a few. And the Santa Fe up in the northern edge, and the St. Mary's has a few word for.
Well, now, does he have the bees himself?
Yeah, he has bees, this man.
Well, now, they don't produce honey 12 months a year.
No.
Well, what does he feed the bees the rest of the time?
Oh, well, a beekeeper, he has to be fixed so that orange blossoms take care of it part-time, and the tupelos take care part-time. Natural shrubs like palmetto make good honey. Gallberry makes good honey. Natural plants. And they season over from one thing to another during the growing season. In winter, the hives all go dormant.
What is it? About an 8 months job?
Probably more than that. In South Florida, they have longer seasons.
They go dormant here in the fresh frost.
The northern part of the state, I think you're about right.
Right along in here.
Now and then, though, in October, November, we have a week of warm, sunny weather, and the bees are out.
November, December,
but
January,
you don't find much of that. They're dormant
4 months.
Yeah, most of the time. They're not as dormant as you think. They're workers.
Yeah.
If it gets cold, they huddle together and keep the warmth. If it gets too hot in there, they fan each other and keep the temperature down. They have learned to live with the weather.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything about bees, so I just heard my friend John Haney talk.
That's John Haney?
Yeah, this is John Haney.
Yeah.
He's retired also. He's another one like me. He doesn't amount to 2 cents.
Oh, doesn't he?
No, he...
But he don't care.
But he had something to do, and he works.
Yeah.
And then he works at his job. But, Mr. Nealon, where
did you get to be such a public man? You could do all this and still not be a public man the way you've been.
Well, I'm not a public man.
You started that in Flagler County.
I did what in Flagler County?
That's what you started in Flagler County.
Well, no, I really started in public work, yes, but I really worked here 3 years as farm foreman on the cemetery.
I know, but that was different. I'm talking about where you were.
Public
just,
work, yeah.
Just
I started
work,
there.
Where you were.
Yeah, I said, well, here's the problem.
Yes.
What can you do about it?
Yes.
Well, you do what you can.
Yeah. And that's where you got started at that.
I try to see the whole picture, not just one part of it.
Yeah. But that's where you started, in Flagler County.
Yeah, that's where I started in public work. Except here, this is part
but
of the
But then you had that, you were the district forester or something.
Oh, yeah.
But that wasn't public work. That was...
that was restricted to fire lanes.
No, it was for the State Forest Service. I worked around 4.5, 5 years, something like that, for the State Forest Service. That was because the county hadn't paid me for 5 months, my $60. So when the State Forest Service came in 1929, the Depression was coming on. And the state forester came down to my county and he said, if you're that much interested, you should be working for us. Well,
but you were working in
he paid me a better salary than I was getting and transportation paid. And gave me a terrible job. I had to plow fire lines from Florella, Alabama to St. Augustine with farm equipment. All was broken down.
Oh,
uh-huh. And I got his contract completed on time by April the 30th.
Yeah.
And so then he promoted me to district forester and gave me 12 counties. And that was the worst thing he ever did, because all the forestry graduates that came from Pennsylvania and Ohio and other states up north and didn't know one pine from another were mad as hatters that an unqualified man gets that job when we're qualified.
You mean that goes
they
back
fought
that,
me ever since.
You mean that goes back that far?
Yeah, they fought me ever since. Anything I said was condemned, right or wrong. And I didn't have anything wrong that I promote. Before I say this thing could be done, I've tried it out. So I have with my multiple use. Now everything's multiple use. And what do the foresters say that 20 years scoffed and scorned and 30 years and 40 years when I started it? We've been doing that all along.
Yeah.
Lying bunch.
Yeah. That's right.
That's human nature. I bet it's been going on for 10,000 years in this world.
Just the old bandwagon.
Yeah.
Mr. Nealon, but during that 3 or 4 years you were in the state forestry.
Yeah.
You had something specific to do there. Yeah. You had to keep those fire lines open.
Yeah, that wasn't all I had to do. And I had my 12, because that was the beginning, 1 year. But when I got my 12 counties, I think I told you I had 12 counties up to the Georgia border.
Yeah.
And the 9 Mile Swamp caught a fire in an unusually dry summer and winter, and the black muck burned 2 to 3 feet deep in that thing. 9 miles of it. It would break out in the morning on the west end, at noon in the center, and at night when the wind changed on the eastern end of that 9 mile front. And I had 8 men and 1 tractor. I fought fire for 2 days and nights without eating or sleeping. Lost 70,000 acres. You had to run for your life. I saw cattle got surrounded, bellowing in death. Wild razorback hogs didn't usually stand anything burned to death. We had to run for our lives off. Wind was roaring. I never saw fire like that in the woods before. There would be a wall of fire a quarter of a mile away, 10, 12 feet high, roaring along with the wind. Every so often down through the thing, a white streak appeared. What was that? I don't know. A white, blazing white streak. Looked like white fire instead of red fire. Well, then the wind would shift and we'd keep watching. Back of us would be a burning twig thrown back there. We had to run for our lives or we'd be surrounded. And that went on for 2 days and nights. And when I got through, I said, we need something we haven't got in controlling fire. And I came out with this program. I scoffed and scorned and...
Now, you published that.
Finally, after, with all the opposition of the profession and the State Forest Service condemned it, I got some people to put it in. After 4 or 5 years, I found out it was a success.
Yeah.
And therefore, I promoted and wrote my bulletin that in the grave in the game.
But that was long afterwards when your bulletin came out.
Yeah, that is about 4 or 5 years after I had proven to myself, one in Escambia County, two in Escambia County, and one in Nassau County, where I got the man to put the program in.
Yeah.
And he had no more trouble with fire before he got burned out every so often. Well, I stayed with it to this day, and it hasn't been accepted. I begin to know now why, with the State Forest Service. If I hold it wrong for government to do for people what they can, should, and will do better for themselves. You never had anything done for you that you liked as well as if you'd been able to do it.
Yeah.
So it is. So why should we dig $6 million or more dollars every year out of our pockets to do for the big forest landowners what they could do successfully, and now they are not protecting successfully. What I had trouble with there will hit again.
Yeah.
They don't have the means, so I provide the means for fire protection. So now, still they don't want it. Why? They'd have to cut their organization down to one-third of what the taxpayers now pay.
Yeah.
And to get successful, productive protection, not unsuccessful. And another thing, we have a shortage of beef. When they took the range away from the cattlemen, now we have a beef shortage. With my program, we'd have plenty of beef.
Well, there you are.
So don't be ahead of your time, by golly, you'd be condemned.
Oh, Mr. Nealon, I don't think I am.
I don't care about that. I just want to see something better accepted.
Yeah.
And I'll fight until I see it's accepted. It may take 50 years, but it's taken 42 already.
Well, it's coming about now.
When I quit with the State Foresters, I had put in some wide grading strips around blocks of timber. As soon as I quit, they plowed them all up right away and put them into trees. Just prejudice, I guess, and ignorance. You know, one thing that occurred was written in the top forestry bulletin in this nation, and a forester wrote it. American emphasis on the diploma leads to ignorance and ineptitude. A lot of truth in that. You need the diploma, but you need something more to go with it, or it's worthless.
I believe you there.
So, if you don't have the diploma, the door won't open, so you better get it. You on the way? When you think you can graduate?
Shouldn't be too much longer.
When?
Shouldn't be too much longer. It just depends, you know, on how much you want to jam in at a time.
You want?
We're gonna have what?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I've noticed. You know, I work part time at a gas station on the weekends, just help this fella out, because I've always had an interest in that.
Yeah.
And he's been in the business 15 years. And it's just not anything he doesn't know.
Who is that? I mean, not the name.
Eddie.
Oh, our prison friend here.
And these fellas comes in that have been mechanic school. You know, they've got their they've been trained to fix a car, and they want to use all these machines.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eddie doesn't have any of them. And he can fix a car, he can just listen to it. So, well, it's this, or it's that. So you're right, you know, you got to have that experience.
Yep, right. If you don't have that, it's worthless. You've got to have experience and get it as quick as you can. What line do you expect to follow?
Nealon, what is that?
Oh, that's the old man in the 4-H Club camp in Escambia County.
Oh, that's a 4-H?
Yeah, that's a 4-H the camp there, I have to instruct him in how to measure the tree for board feet. And you have a graduated ruling piece of equipment.
Now those boys there, that's the right age.
Yes, you may be making some converts. You might make some converts.
Yeah.
You may think about trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was taken, doesn't say when. Was it in one of my books or something? Or my...
Yes, it was in one of
them. Oh, yeah. Yes, I had quite a lot of that to do. I think sometimes our best work is done with the younger people. The old people are a little hard to convince. Now, then we find one that you can convince.
What was the occasion for that?
For the meeting there, that was probably a 4-H club camp meeting for a week. And we learned not only about trees, but about many other things. But I was to instruct them about the trees and the forest and the important things there. We'd plant some trees there some days. That just happened to be a measuring time, an estimating how much wood there is, how many board feet in a tree.
Now, you've been doing things like that ever since you were in Flagler County. No matter.
Yes, ever since I started the 4-H Club work. Let's see, when was that? About 1924, 23 or 24, along in there.
Yeah.
And there I had to get all my information out of Washington. We didn't even have a state forest service, didn't have any school of forestry, didn't have anything. What little information I could get was from remote areas, and naturally I had developed some of it myself. Know the different pines. Seven native pines at a glance, you get a forester down.
We just
and I'd say, I might say, oh, about as far from here to that slash pine over there. Which one's the slash pine? Our most important tree.
Yeah, we got some of
Channel 2 right, the end of Channel 2 right, and the session in the kitchen, Mr. Nealon and I, and somebody, Rick, I guess, Mr. Nealon and Rick and I in the kitchen, and the others, Ms. Nealon and the others in Mamu's room. Channel 2 right, and beginning the end of the Channel 2 right, the end of Channel 2 right. And this is Rick and I and Mr. Nealon in the kitchen this Wednesday, the 8th of August, 73. Channel 2 right, the end of Channel 2 right. Rick and I in the kitchen with Mr. Nealon and the 8th of August, Wednesday, the 8th of August, 73.